This is Bob Lang with the Oral History Project of the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Today is October 12th, 2009. This is another interview in the sequence with Judith Kornblatt, Senior Associate Dean of the Graduate School. Judith, when we stopped the last time, which I think was the end of August, you were in the midst of talking about possible changes in the way the WARF money was allocated by the graduate school. And you said there appeared to be some changes on the horizon, and you did not know what was going to happen subsequent to that. So anything that you can comment on that?
I can talk a little bit more about that. Although it is still what the proposal is itself for changing the structure of the graduate school is still very unclear, still definitely in flux. And I think at the time I had talked about two different aspects of the issue that I was finding disturbing. One had to do with the process and one had to do with the product, what the actual reorganization would be like. In terms of the process, I was concerned about some of our much complained about but nonetheless dearly held beliefs in the value of shared governance, mm-hmm. and how that might be playing out in a major reorganization of a school on campus and the creation of a new office. Since that time, I have become calmer, not because the situation has changed, but because others have seen the same issues and the same dangers as I have. So mm-hmm. I guess I'm feeling a little bit less alone in that, in concerns about how major decisions are made and how we balance what bubbles up from below and what comes down from above. And I believe, of course, there needs to be a balance. But I had felt that the situation might be moving a little bit to the unbalanced side. So that is still very much uncertain. There are a couple of ad hoc committees now that are looking into the process and not only the product. And there is a resolution that's been placed on the agenda for the Faculty Senate for the next meeting. So there are a number of people on campus who are who want to be involved in the decision-making process.
When you say there's a resolution being proposed for Faculty Senate, what's the nature of that resolution?
The resolution is to essentially slow down the process so that it can be examined and to reconfirm that the faculty, in particular, because this is for the Faculty Senate, need to be involved in any decision of this sort. A clear proposal for the reorganization needs to be put forward, and it needs to be confirmed by the Faculty Senate.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any expectation of how that will be received and voted upon?
I don't know, because this whole thing is so uncertain, I guess. I do know that the chancellor has asked to speak with the department, with the senators and the department that has put forward the resolution and has asked to speak with them in advance. And I think that's a good sign because it wouldn't be good for the university to come to a kind of a conflict of authority. Mm-hmm. Apparently, there are some state statutes that give the chancellor responsibility for the execution of and running of the university. There are others that give very similar, there are other statutes or another statute that gives very similar uses very similar wording for the role of the Faculty Senate and the faculty. Mm-hmm. And so there's no, there's no one would benefit by any kind of a constitutional crisis in that way. We will all benefit by a strong well-received chancellor, provost, and faculty and staff. That's to all of our advantages. So I don't know what will come of the meeting with the department in question, but I hope that it's a time of real discussion.
Now, Judith, if the Senate votes in favor of the resolution, to the casual observer on campus, is that perceived as a rebuke to the chancellor?
I suspect it would be, but I can't say for sure.
Mm-hmm. This is really a very difficult time.
It is still a very difficult time. Personally, I think how I started out this morning, I feel a little better because I don't feel so alone. But no one knows what's going to happen. And I'm assuming that everybody has the best interests of the university at heart. I don't think that there's anyone here with any type of an evil inclination, although people have different understandings of what might be best for the university. And so maybe I should move into the product and what about, you know, how it might affect Wharf dollars. There are a number of issues at stake, not only the Wharf dollars, although they interact with many of the other issues. So where the grad school centers will go, and the grad school centers are the graduate school is the second largest school on campus for bringing in external funding. So it's a very large enterprise, and you can imagine how much personnel is involved in that, how much accounting is involved in that, a great deal of the time of the staff in the graduate school is indeed involved in that, research administration, IT. And those people who do accounting, HR, IT, research administration, do it for both research and graduate education. And so if the two were to be decoupled, it's not clear exactly who would be doing what and what would be duplicated, where we might have duplication. So where the centers go is an important issue, and who decides where the centers go, again, I guess I'm back on process, is important. I mean, that should be, I think, a question of shared governance, and that maybe there'll be some flexibility there. The Wharf dollars, there has been some ambiguity on the part of the provost and the chancellor about who will be in charge of those. What is certain is that they're committed to have it continue to be a faculty committee that decides where most of those dollars go, whether that faculty committee will be in the graduate school or potentially in this new office for research is not absolutely clear, whether it would be representative of the four divisions on campus and therefore the funds might be equitably distributed. That's not at all clear from the proposal. And whether the graduate school will simply be given a lump sum of the Wharf funds decided by some other body, and those funds would be for, let's say, just fellowships, that would be a very difficult situation for those of us who are shepherding the programs in graduate education, because we have many, many, many more programs besides just university fellowships that are very successful. There hasn't been any, you know, it's not that there's been a groundswell of complaints against them by any means. So we are in the process of taking on yet new projects, as I think we should be, but I'm wary to take on those new projects because everything requires resources. And we don't know and won't know for, could be months, what the results of this will be.
Judith, does Wharf itself have any say in this reorganization?
No. I do know that the chancellor has spoken with the Wharf board about it. She's interested in having more interaction and more, let's just say interaction with the Wharf board And having more authority for discussions in discussions of the distribution of funds than chancellors in the past have had. John Wiley was actually put on the board, and that was very helpful. And so now she's also on the board. Both of those are alumni of the university, and so it's legitimate that they be on it. We don't know what would happen if a new chancellor were to come in who wasn't. Nonetheless, the dean of the graduate school was always the main conduit for negotiations with the Wharf Board, and she has indicated that she wants that to change. So she's spoken with them. I do know that Hector DeLuca, who is the chair of the ad hoc committee that the university committee has put together, has also communicated with the Wharf Board somehow. I don't know exactly how it has happened. Do they have a say in it? The early charter and communication that went back and forth with Professor Steenbach all included the graduate school as the center for the distribution of these funds, but there is clearly room for interpretation in any written document, as in any oral document. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how that will affect it. The current director of Wharf has been more and more interested in special projects and issues for Wharf money outside of the gift to the graduate school.
This is Carl Gilbranson.
So where he stands on this, I definitely don't know. The Wharf is not a university unit. If I were the one deciding whether they have authority, jurisdiction, about any restructuring, I would say no. Should they have input? Sure, everyone should have input. Everyone should be asked and their points of view considered.
Judith, it's interesting that we're meeting today. I have finished two interviews in the last few weeks, both of which took a considerable amount of time to have concern expressed over the weakening of faculty governance. I can't tell you who they are, but quite articulate and quite concerned about it, and relating the decline in the power of faculty governance to what their perception was the potential decline of the university.
I share that. I can't say that I see a one-to-one correspondence. The same way that I don't see a one-to-one correspondence between the current structure of the graduate school and the ways that the associate deans are used and interaction with campus and the success we have in research. There isn't a one-to-one correspondence, but I'm going to sound a little mystical here, but there's a kind of magic that takes place, mm-hmm. a kind of communication and interaction that makes this a different place than many, many other places that I know about and that I've heard about. And I think that the loss of that magic, both in terms of that, the ways in which the graduate school has been involved in research and the way that faculty governance works, and I see them as similar issues, I think that that could definitely change the university, and that change would not be for the better.
Mm-hmm. Again, it's interesting the words you use. Not that these other faculty have talked in mystical terms, but they have said one of the reasons the University of Wisconsin is the University of Wisconsin is directly correlated to the presence of faculty governance, mm-hmm. which many other major universities do not have.
Mm-hmm. And the prominence of it and the clear statement of the value of it, because other universities have it to a certain extent. Shared governance is an issue, you know, you can read about it in the Chronicle. It's not unheard of elsewhere, but I think the way in which we have valued it here on campus, even when we haven't always, you know, as I said in the beginning, loved it, mm-hmm. because it is slow, messy, It is hard from above to get changes to happen. It's hard from below to get changes to happen. But when they do happen, if there's broad buy-in, those changes can really have a major effect. And they're also not at the whim of individuals who come and go. We know how often chancellors, provosts move from position to position. Mm-hmm. Whereas if they have been developed through the shared governance process, they have greater longevity, deeper roots within the system. And I think that's really an important thing. And it's an important thing in terms of the commitment that not everyone, but many people have to this place, that they feel that it is their place. And I remember many years ago, and I can't remember if it was David Ward or John Wiley, who was talking about hiring at the senior level, full professors. Mm-hmm. And he said, when you hire a full professor, you have, by definition, hired somebody without a strong sense of institutional loyalty. Because you've hired someone who's left another place. And I really took that to heart. I mean, not that we should always grow our own from within. It's very good to get, and I benefit a lot myself from a perspective that comes when people come in from the outside. Mm-hmm. But there is a way in which partly shared governance has helped to foster a kind of institutional loyalty here that makes it, again, a special place.
Judith, would it be your guess that there are segments of the university community that would support this change?
Yes, absolutely. If we knew what the change was. The problem is right now we really don't know. We know that there's a radical change that's been proposed, but we don't know the details of it. But certainly there are elements of this campus, myself included, who would support elements of the proposal that would improve the administrative infrastructure for research here on this campus. I think that we can improve those, and we have shown over the past couple years that we have improved them, but with more resources. So RSP, various different compliance issues. There isn't a university in the country that's not dealing with compliance issues. Mm-hmm. And we have indeed gotten a very strong report from NSF about what we've done with effort reporting, for instance. RSP has improved immensely because of the APR process that they've been going through, and there's no reason to assume that it wouldn't continue to improve with the resources that it needs. So there isn't any indication that it needs to be a restructuring in order for that to happen, but there certainly are a lot of people on campus who would say that continued improvement in those areas does need to happen. Let's say anything.
Okay. Judith, when administrations change, and clearly the one has changed here with the departure of Chancellor Wiley and Chancellor Carolyn Biddy Martin coming in. What's your assessment of the impact that Chancellor Martin is having and that you think might have on the university?
Mm-hmm. I think that the university faced the opportunity to have one of those perspective shifts that can happen when someone comes in from the outside, and that it's always good to examine ourselves from the as though with eyes from the outside and have someone come in and be able to say, well, wait a minute, why do you do it this way? Why do you do it that way? And so I think that they're going to be, you know, when we look back, there are going to be a number of things that we saw the chancellors take initiative on that will be very positively received. I think that, although I was not in favor of the creation of a new vice chancellor position for university relations, I think her emphasis on the public perception of the university is important, and we really did need that.
Is that the position Vince Sweeney took?
That's correct.
Okay.
So I'm not sure that it needed a new vice chancellor position. As a matter of fact, it would seem to me that the person in charge of university relations is precisely the chancellor. But I think that that shift in perspective I think is important. Work that she's doing for undergraduates and, you know, the Madison Initiative for undergraduates, I think that for the most part those are very good. I had questions about the process of how she got the Madison Initiative through and how it was developed. And I do think that she came in with very little patience for shared governance, and that she operates in a very different way, which isn't per se bad, but that she didn't take the time to integrate her approach or gain consensus for her approach, and that in the long run that will be regardless of positive initiatives she might take, that style will be a negative, I'm predicting now, a negative legacy, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Would you assess her as very much a top-down leader?
I would assess her as very much a top-down leader, very interested in hierarchy and lines of authority.
Mm-hmm.
Which is actually curious about this proposal for the reorganization of the graduate school and research, as far as we can tell what it is, because although it ostensibly is to create cleaner lines of reporting in a couple of really important areas, it blurs the lines even more. So, and I don't know how much, there's also not clear how much is interaction between the provost and the chancellor and which comes from which side. So I don't know. This is definitely a provost chancellor tag team about this proposal. But I would definitely say that she is much more hierarchical than we're used to having here. And sometimes that's good and very efficient. I can also say that there are she has appealed to a number of places on campus who might not see all of the process issues, and has produced a positive effect. So, for instance, she has announced that she will provide extra funds for fellowships in the arts and humanities.
Mm-hmm.
So, individuals in the arts and humanities who don't see the bigger picture think that's great, she's great for us, she's wonderful for us, and might not see that actually the role of the arts and humanities on campus might be diminishing over time, regardless of this influx of money for this one particular arts and humanities initiative. And they might not be, there's no reason why they could see that. So I am concerned about that, and there'll be people say, oh no, she's great, it's wonderful, she's just really cares about the arts and humanities. And they can't see that actually, they can't see the longer term and broader picture that could indeed be ultimately more destructive for the arts and humanities.
I'm smiling because it's so classic, isn't it? Particularly people in the humanities seizing short-term gain at the expense of long-term.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I can't blame people. She's a very appealing public speaker. Her public persona is really very positive, and I think that's why I start out by saying that her legacy in terms of the perception of the public about the university is a very, very positive one.
Mm-hmm. Judith, in the change, the proposed change in the graduate school, have you and Dean Cadwallader had any input? Have you been consulted, or have you been informed?
I have not been informed or consulted in any significant way, and I would categorize how Martin's involvement, I would categorize that as informed more than consulted.
Interesting. Makes me feel in some time, in a year or two, maybe I should have a follow-up interview with Dean Cadwallader.
Yeah. Yeah.
Judith, as this interview moves to its conclusion, I'm interested in a global perspective on what your thinking is about the department that you came from, the university that you experienced that has changed over the 20 some odd years you've been here. What you see coming down the pike for the university in the state of Wisconsin. This is something that I do with all the interview subjects, and we're interested in your observations about the university at all levels.
Mm-hmm. This is a hard one.
Yes.
Because in some sense I have too much to say and too little.
Mm-hmm.
This has been a wonderful place for me, the University of Wisconsin. And it is a extremely large, extremely multifaceted, extremely active place. And so I it would be wrong of me to have any kind of to draw any kind of doomsday scenario, because it's such an organic unit that it can morph and change in all sorts of ways, so that I would say probably my sense is that University of Wisconsin is going to continue and thrive for many, many years. It will go through changes with its relationship to the state, relationship to its alumni. I predict it will be a strong institution. It will, if it turns out that the U.S. economy cannot sustain the same number of 60-something large research institutions and some fall off the edges, I don't think Wisconsin will be one of those. However, because of its size and its inner strength, I guess. However, I think that changes will happen, and short-term, medium-term changes can be very disruptive. In terms of starting with my department, I see that it's changed quite a bit since I've been here. And we have now two new faculty members, and out of 9 or 10, that's quite a few. I personally am really looking forward to passing the mantle onto them. They're very energetic. They both care very much both about the field and about teaching, and I think that there are going to be many good things to come, but it could very well change. There could be a push to include heritage speakers, a different kind of department than I came into, because Russian speakers and Russian heritage individuals in the country are very different than they were when I first came in, when I went to undergraduate and graduate mm-hmm. school. So that the idea of sort of the undergraduate coming in, under UW undergraduate coming in from the farm and somehow discovering Russian literature and taking Russian, becoming a Russian major, I think there'll be fewer and fewer of those. There will be more and more people who have some connection already to Russian, to Russia, and that's not a bad thing at all. It's just a different complexion. It'll be a very different complexion to the department. So that's where it's going. I think it will stay one of the major graduate training institutions in the country.
Judith, for the record, who are the two new faculty?
The one was hired last year. She's a junior faculty member, Irina Shevelyanka, and the other was hired this year, Karen Evans-Romaine. And she's was hired at the associate level, actually with the hope that fairly soon she can go into administration in the department. And she has that kind of energy that would be very, very good for the department. So I think that we will keep our major profile, but some of our bigger name scholars will retire in the next 5 years or so. And that will change without David Bethay here, Alexander Delinin. It'll change the perspective of the department, although their names will still be tied to it. A reputation can last.
And you will no longer.
And I will no longer
be when, in the direction. We're talking about people who have helped make the reputation.
Right, and I will
it's
no longer be there.
It's appropriate for your name to be in there, and we will address your plans later.
Right. In terms of the university as a whole, I think that this governance issue that we're going through now is major, but is not permanent. And although potentially there can be I already feel within myself and within my colleagues sort of a declining sense of commitment to the institution, I guess, in a way, and that can have an effect, and we can see more people leaving the institution potentially. I don't think it's forever. I think that these things go in cycles. I think that the medium term is not so sunny, but I don't think that we're seeing any permanent decline of the University of Wisconsin.
No, I want to ask you to pursue that a little bit. Any number of faculty that I have talked to have said that they feel the university is truly at a tipping point between remaining one of the world's great centers of learning and becoming a solid second-tier university.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What's your perception on that?
I guess I'm more pragmatic, that there's not one tipping point for the whole university. There are different aspects that will flourish and decline at different times. So I don't think it's too complex an organism for that. I know certainly there are people who feel it's going way too tipping way too much toward the tech, mm-hmm. big science side, and ignoring its traditional role in the humanities and social sciences. But there's really more of a symbiotic relationship between that. So that, yes, if we put more money and more attention into the sciences, that nonetheless comes back and feeds into the other areas. And I don't think there's one straw that could break the camel's back in any way. I think that there are lots and lots of different steps and missteps and recovered steps. I know that that's part of the apocalyptic rhetoric, but I don't believe in apocalyptic rhetoric as applying to much besides the apocalypse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about the graduate school and the research program here? I know we've addressed the particular situation earlier, but you've been here a long time, and you'll be leaving from a senior associate dean position.
Mm-hmm.
What about the graduate school and the research program here at the university?
Mm-hmm. Well, let me start first with the grad ed side of it, because I do think that there are many aspects of it that have been strengthened, partly under my watch, partly began before then, and I just sort of sped it along. And I think that in terms of graduate education, as long as we continue to receive adequate resources, we are very well situated nationally. I guess I do, and I have myself participated in a little bit of apocalyptic rhetoric about, because of the magic that I talked about before,
mm-hmm.
about what will happen without this particular configuration. And I do fear, I fear a possible decline, but again, I think it's a midterm decline, mid-level. I don't think it's forever. I think that things come and go. And I also realize how much personalities have to do with any current strength. And so I think that the relationship between the particular dean and associate deans is crucial for maintaining that magic. And that changes all the time, depending on who's there. And I think I might have mentioned this before, already a change that I see for the worse, but could always change it back the other way, in that the associate deans were always understood to be in the afternoons. I think I did mention this before. Mm-hmm. And because of that, they would always have this opportunity to interact. Mm-hmm. You could always know you'd find your colleague, and you could. Well, that over the past several years has somewhat eroded. And that's, I think, had an effect on how we interact and how we work together. Mm. The very fact that my office is on the second floor instead of the third floor has also eroded that to a certain extent. But I remember in, former years, 5:30, 6 o'clock, everyone else had left and the associate deans would just get together and talk about issues. And it was very, very helpful, mm-hmm. both for our sense of community and for deciding on problems. So that's already eroded, unrelated to this newest change or proposal. But I also don't think it's forever. Different personalities will come in with different ideas of how to best support the research and the graduate education missions of this university. So I think that we could be in for some rocky times ahead with a lot of disillusioned people and angry people. And yet I don't think that we're going to topple.
There are those who say, if you have and not just about Wisconsin, once you lose it, once you have it, however we define it, it's not possible to regain it. Do you share that view?
I guess that isn't the way that I've seen life proceed in general. I do know that it takes years to form a reputation and overnight to ruin the reputation. Mm-hmm. But I've also seen, a reputation isn't just one thing, and different people can see you in different ways. I don't think we would ever go so far that we could never reclaim it. I don't know. It's just a gut feeling. And my sense of, again, the size and the organic integrity of this place, that, yeah, something might, we might have some really disturbed and disturbing governance for a while. But we'll get back on our feet. We might lose some major researchers, but I don't think any one researcher on this campus is so important, whether that person deals with flu or deals with stem cells or is Lori Moore in the, I think we're much bigger than just 1, 5, 10, 20 scholars. Mm-hmm. And young people and new people are always coming. So again, I think I would not subscribe to that apocalyptic scenario.
Let me ask you this. Again, I have heard from people, not emeritus so much as faculty who are senior, mm-hmm. not quite ready to retire, but fairly soon, saying that they have noted a significant decline in younger faculty and faculty, maybe even mid-career, in terms of a willingness to participate in issues, mm-hmm. on campus, mm-hmm. on running things, mm-hmm. department chairs, mm-hmm. climbing the ladder, what have mm-hmm. you. Mm-hmm.
I would say that I've seen that too, just to get people to run for some of those faculty senate committees, the graduate faculty executive committee. We often have trouble getting enough people on the ballot, even the divisional committees. I don't know. I think there are multiple causes for that. Some of it is maybe us, meaning the senior faculty members, fault, if anything, for not nurturing that sense of community and inclusion. But we're not to be totally blamed, because academic life has become so much more complicated and so much more stressful, and there's so much less time and energy for that for the senior faculty members. So how can we expect it to be there in the junior faculty members? Just grant getting, publishing, even teaching, new technologies, budget cuts, class size, TA budget, whatever it is, there is just, and I know from having been chair, just the amount of paperwork committee work has increased huge amounts, and that puts a strain on the system. Mm-hmm. And I have seen that. However, that doesn't mean that there aren't some individuals and a huge number of individuals out there who are willing to and able to participate in governance. So I don't think that what we see is that no one will do it. And it might be a period of a little bit more difficulty, but I don't see any declines as permanent. I see the life in the world as much more up and down and up and down. And yes, I think we're in a down place right now. And will it have ramifications into the, you know, middle term? Yes. Does it mean necessary? Is it a fait accompli? Is it, you know, determined that we will then decline? No, I just don't think that's the way the world works. And I see new people hired with tremendous enthusiasm, great reputations, and people come to Wisconsin for all different reasons. So, you know, maybe someone will come here who hadn't come because of our tradition of shared governance and wanting to do administrative work, but came because, you know, she had two job offers, one in Arizona and one here, and her ailing mother was here. Mm-hmm. Right? There are all sorts of reasons why you might come here. And you wouldn't imagine that that's the person who's going to go ahead and be the next, you know, or the next, you know, chair of the university committee, but maybe it will be. So that I think that those opportunities and those chances are always here. And as long as there are still some people, and there are, who are talking about the values of collaboration and joint decision making and shared governance and consultative leadership, there will be more people who come in to fill the place. But I do think we're in a lull now. I have to agree with those others.
Now, Judith, another issue that is facing the university is it's, for all practical purposes, it's no longer a public university in terms of financial support from the state. As large as it is, as a percentage, we all know it's much less. And the significance of private fundraising is much higher. Does that trouble you at all?
I wish it weren't the case, but there are a lot of universities out there that are supported in all sorts of different ways, so I don't think it's a death knell. What is most troubling now is, although we get fewer and fewer funds from the state, the amount of restrictions that the state places upon us are growing. And so, for instance, I mean, here's an example of the furloughs. So although we have employees on campus who are not paid a single dollar of state funds, fully supported on federal funds, they're required also to take a furlough. Mm-hmm. That is a restriction that is not commensurate with the amount of funding that we get. And there are obviously a lot of those things. I'm sure many people have talked to you about the difficulties in the classified staff human resources system. Even I was just talking the other day about a potential collective bargaining for research assistants and talking about the TAA and the negotiation that the TAA does with the state. They don't negotiate with system. They don't negotiate with the university. They negotiate with OSER. Mm-hmm. And that places certain restrictions upon us that are very difficult to deal with. So I think that that might, instead of just hoping that there'll be more state money, I don't think that there's, you know, maybe we won't continue to decline, but I don't think we're going to go in the other direction anytime soon. Mm-hmm. If we can work on creating more flexibility for our own decision making, I think that would help a lot.
Judith, maybe this is a good time, following your assessment of where we are now, to talk about your personal plans, which are quite interesting. In and of themselves, but also vis-a-vis what you've been saying about the future of the university. Mm-hmm.
A number of years ago, I don't know, 7 maybe, I began to think about what it would be like if I were to retire early and not sit around the fire and whittle, but do something else, do something different. Maybe go someplace else, go to New York, go to Jerusalem. I mean, those are probably the two places where I would like to, I'd like to live in both those places. Mm-hmm. I don't know if selling my house here in Madison will allow me to buy an apartment in both those places. I'm pretty sure it won't. And what that would be like, because I have really enjoyed my life as an academic. Mm-hmm. I find it stimulating, exciting. I've met wonderful people. I've been frustrated, but actually have grown from that frustration. And I think I've done a lot. Mm-hmm. I've taught a lot of students, undergraduate and graduate. I've written books, articles. Mm-hmm. I've had an impact on my national organizations. By the way, I just won an award for my last book from the Association of Women in Slavic Studies, so
well,
I'm very pleased about that. And I feel like I've made a contribution. So I don't feel like I have to do this forever. You know, when I've looked at senior colleagues retire and they have 3-4 more books in them, there are other things I could write books on for sure, but I don't see that as my driving force. So I had started already to think about retiring early, and I have had a number of different health issues of various different kinds. Mm-hmm. As my father said, if something's going to happen, it's going to happen to me. he died this summer, unfortunately, but he was a physician, and he said, if he were my HMO, he'd take a contract out on my life. Because the surgeries and the, cancer. I had three eye surgeries just last year. I had cancer. I had another tumor that had to, have organs removed. I've had all sorts of different issues. I'm continuing to have an eye problem where I'm losing the vision, my peripheral vision in my left eye. Ironically, my father was not just a physician, but an ophthalmologist.
that seems a little unfair.
Yeah, it's very unfair. But it's a miracle. Boy, am I sounding mystical today. that things ever go right in the human body. So many processes are going on all at the same time. Mm-hmm. So it's not unusual that things should go wrong. It's unusual, in fact, that things go right and healthy babies are born and we get up every morning and we walk around and we interact with people and we, mm-hmm. Share and love and whatever, reproduce, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And so I don't have a kind of why me feeling about having been in the hospital. And it was about 5 years ago, I think, when I was in the hospital for something. And I realized how important a good nurse is. That of course you want a good doctor. And my family were all doctors, and they, you know, truth be told, looked down on the nursing staff and were very arrogant and haughty at times. But to have someone come in and actually hold your hand or put a hand on your arm or be there in the middle of the night when you wake up, those are crucial interpersonal moments. And I started to think, you know, although I never had a desire to be a nurse, I'm not particularly enamored of blood and, you know, bodily fluids in any particular way. And as a matter of fact, I think that will be a, you know, sticking a needle in someone's arm, though, as my father says, it doesn't hurt at all. Because, of course, it doesn't hurt him. It hurts the person you're sticking. I think that'll be difficult, you know, something to overcome. But I think that the way in which nursing can affect human lives is really important. And so when I started to think, you know, that would be a wonderful thing to do, to make a contribution to this world. The world needs nurses. And also, it needs them so much that I could work part-time, I could choose which kind of nursing I wanted to do, I could travel potentially and do nursing. It could be a really exciting time without, it could be a really exciting job. I do know that there's going to be drudgery and that it's my body and my mind are older and it's going to be difficult. And I might have to do the night shift and, you know, for a while and pay my dues. But I just feel it could be potentially such an important thing to do and exciting for myself. So
it's such a dramatic change.
It's a big change. And I actually do enjoy seeing the shock on people's faces when I tell them. And then they'll say, oh, is this something you always wanted to do? And I go, no, it never occurred to me before. But it just seems to be a perfect fit at this point for, you know, I want to retire in time that I still have some vitality and some energy to do it. So I've been taking classes, investigating where I can get a nursing degree best, you know, thinking it doesn't mean I'm necessarily ending being a Slavist. I can still, you know, go to meetings and, you know, read. I could even write if I want to, but this is another whole area that I can explore and learn from and meet people.
Now, this is real. This choice of yours is really driven by a personal need of yours or interest. It is not so much a reaction to the environment in which you find yourself.
Well, actually, not at all. And that's one of the things that makes me a little uncomfortable, that as I sort of pull out, I don't want it to look like, and I myself don't want to feel that I'm kind of, you know, abandoning a sinking ship or it just, the timing, however, has turned out to be exactly right. I mean, I didn't know exactly what the timing would be, but I have put in for a sabbatical for next year where I can starting in September, where I can finish up a number of my Slavic duties and prepare more for the next stage, and then come back and teach for a couple years.
In
Slavic languages. And, you know, I don't think it is that fair to the graduate school to take a year off and then try to come back. I think the graduate school is going to have to find its own way. But I don't want anyone to think that I'm, you know, cutting my losses now, because this has been in the works for a while. But I am afraid that that's what it's going to look like.
Now, I think you said off tape in an earlier interview, you're taking preparatory classes
Correct.
Now in science, I'm assuming.
Actually, what I've been doing so far has been social science. I've taken a sociology class, a psychology class. I'm taking a growth and human development class. I will need to start taking chemistry and anatomy and human physiology. Those are all prerequisites to get into a nursing program. And my assumption is I will take an undergraduate nursing degree. I don't need to do that. One could get one could go to MATC, get an associate degree, and then get an RN. I think I want to do it a little more, I guess, rigorous than that. And it's also very hard to get into classes at MATC, ironically. But it's also more difficult. I mean, I know the value of a college degree, I guess,
yes.
Having been here for quite some time. So, and I'm not saying that I wouldn't also like to get a master's, but I do think I need to get out into the field and do some work and know what it really is to be a nurse.
And your time frame then is what, Judith?
Probably 3 years from now. I actually have next week, I think, an appointment with benefits office. But I think, although I won't have worked my full, to get a full pension, I think I'm approaching it enough because I have been here a number of, you know, quite a few years,
right.
That it will be worthwhile. You know, I'll be able to retire and then not have to depend on income from nursing, but have that be all a bonus.
Now, are you meeting with the nursing school here at the university?
I have, yes.
And have they been encouraging?
Yeah, yep. You know, it's competitive to get into the nursing school.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have enough instructors. So that's, you know, I'm not guaranteed a spot by any means.
Yes, I'm aware of the shortage of PhD nurses for the nursing schools. Is that in the back of your mind, Judith?
I don't think so. I mean, people said, oh, you're a teacher, you could teach. I don't think that I can teach nursing unless I've been a nurse for a while. I mean, it's a very different, it's an applied field. So I wouldn't feel legitimate, but sure, I can teach. I know how to get up in front of a group of people and, you know, teach them some material, but I don't think that that's really, and I don't see myself doing research in nursing. I mean, that's what a PhD would do. There is a new doctor of nursing practice, that's a practitioner degree. Would I ever get that? Potentially, if I want to go on and be a, you know, nurse practitioner or a specialty, but, you know, my years are limited.
Now, Judith, you've already addressed this by saying that you will not stop being a Slavicist because of your going into nursing school. And I guess I believe that because you will probably keep up with reading and you will probably stay in touch with
mm-hmm.
people here
mm-hmm.
and nationally
mm-hmm.
on that.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder, it just seems funny to me that such a talented academic would switch.
I guess my hope is that I'm talented in more than one area
mm-hmm.
and that I have something to contribute in another area also. And I don't know how much I'll be able to stay involved and feel myself. Well, I think I'll always feel myself to be a Slavist. I mean,
mm-hmm.
It's what I've done, and what, well, some people say Slavicist. It's not clear what
okay.
one should say. Scholar
okay.
of Slavic studies. I think I'll always feel myself to be that. That's who I am, and you know, all of my experiences have led up to that. Do I need to continue doing academic work to continue that feeling? I don't think so. And you know, I'll pull away. I'll have less contact. I'll lose track of who's current in the field. But there are other things in this world to do also.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to explore that.
One more question. Will you, as you project out in the future, do you think you will miss the power that you have as senior associate dean? To affect things and direct things?
I know I like working with people
mm-hmm.
and seeing how I can work with a group of people to get something done.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that kind of experience happens only in graduate school. I think it can happen on the ward in a hospital or it can happen
mm-hmm.
in a volunteer organization. So I think that sense of being an effective leader, I can use in other areas also.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll will it be, you know, very specifically some initiatives I've started, someone else comes in and doesn't pay attention to them or changes them in a different way, will that hurt me? I don't think so. I mean, I feel like I've had a good run and I've done some really good things, but...
Yes, now I believe that because I think you do believe and in fact even know that you've had a good run from Columbia to... Here.
Yeah, I've been very fortunate, and I mean, fortunate that others have helped me, and I've been able to nurture some of my own qualities, and timing has been good in a lot of ways, because there are qualities that, you know, some I didn't even know I had, and others were able to see, so things have worked well.
Okay, let me just conclude this.
Okay.
This now concludes the oral history interview with the most engaging and very distinguished Judith Kornblatt. Thank you, Judith.
You're welcome.